Hi, I'm Michael Hartman.
I'm Naomi Liu.
And I'm Mike Rizzo. And this is OpsCast,
a podcast for marketing ops pros
and RevOps pros.
Created by the MoPros, the number one community for marketing operations professionals.
Tune in to each episode as we chat with real professionals to help elevate you in your marketing operations career.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of OpsCast, brought to you by the MoPros. Today, I'm joined by Mike Rizzo. I'm Michael Hartman. Mike, say hello.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be back.
Awesome. Well, today we've got a interesting topic. At least I find it interesting. This is what I love about being in control of this a little bit. But today we will be talking with Jody Krangel, who has been a voice actor since 2007, has worked with clients from major brands all over the world, including Dell, BBVA, and Kraft, among others. She's also a singer and has put out her own album of jazz, blues, and traditional tunes. Over the years and doing what she does, she's learned a lot about sound and how it influences people. Her podcast on the subject is called Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Thanks for joining us, Jody.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I think it's going to be we're going to have fun with this one. I could already know from our sort of lead up to this. But so let me, for our audience who's mostly in marketing ops, and you and I talked about whether or not this would make a whole lot of sense for them. Mm-hmm. I think it will. Let me give some background about how this even came up, right, and how we connected.
Sure.
So first, I think the folks who are on here, one of our earliest guests on OpsCast was Brandy Sanders, who I think we referenced some of her stuff from that topic, the topic we covered there, even today. But she was also a guest on your podcast. So I think, and then what I saw as a post about, I think we your 100th episode or something like that, and you mentioned her, and that's how I discovered it. So because I'm curious, like I think a lot of people in our audience, I jumped in and started listening and connected with you, and you made a recommendation about a couple of episodes to listen to. But I think this is definitely a topic I had never even thought about, and I'm guessing most of our audience has not thought about. But I do think it's interesting, and I think there's a connection for marketing ops folks who are looking for ways to sort of help move things quickly through when it comes to going to market and all that. So why don't we start with a definition first for our audience? When you say audio branding, or people talk about that, like, how do you define that and kind of what's the scope of that?
Well, I'm going to give you the definition that the International Sound Awards do. There's actually an International Sound Awards. It's put on in Germany, in Hamburg, I believe. And it's done every year. And some of the stuff that they have on that website is really groundbreaking. So I highly recommend people check it out if they're interested. They define it as a brand sound that represents the identity and values of a brand in a distinctive manner. The audio logo, branded functional sounds, brand music, or the brand voice are characteristic elements of audio branding. So it's the wide umbrella of all the sounds associated with your brand, really. And it becomes a sort of sound spectrum of the sort of things that your company offers, the way that you have a visual spectrum of your company.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I talk to brand marketers and they talk about voice of brand, and they're often talking about the written stuff,
yeah.
Right? The language we use, the terminology we use.
Yeah, my head immediately went to the sort of like knock on Netflix that opens up every time it like kind of zooms in. And yeah, so my head immediately
that is
went
a
to
sonic
that.
Logo.
Okay.
I guess it's what you'd call an ear con is another way to describe it. I wouldn't call it. It is a portion of audio branding. It's not the whole thing of what audio branding is.
Mm, okay.
So just to let you know, it's like it's under the umbrella.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Interesting.
Okay.
So if we were talking audio branding and we're thinking about, you know, Netflix in the form of delivering audio, you know, through their video channels, right? Their streaming content. Would that require that every single production, theoretically, I don't know that this is true of Netflix or not, right? But would that require that every production meet a particular decibel standard of output, or always kind of fall within a range based on maybe the category of the video or the show? Like if it's a documentary, it has to kind of match these things or something? I don't even know if they think about audio branding.
Possible, but I mean, each production is different. So I'm assuming when we're talking about brand, we're not necessarily talking about the movies and such that they put out. I mean, yes, they are produced and funded by Netflix, but Netflix itself has a brand identity, and that brand identity has sounds associated with it. So that's their audio brand, the same way that they have a visual brand. So, you know, you're just looking at two sides of the same coin. It's just a further way to make a connection with your audience. And you know, people know what that ba-dum is, and they don't need to see the logo.
Totally.
That's the thing, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, so, if I hear that, I know someone's turned on Netflix in the house, right?
Yeah.
Right, absolutely.
So the key with all of this is consistent repetition, because if you use these things consistently and repeatedly, people start to recognize the sounds as you, and they don't need the visual representation. So that's how our brains work. That's why this is so powerful, and that's why people should be paying attention to it.
Well, yeah. So I think that was kind of one of my next questions, is like, why should, you know, marketers in general care about their audio brand? And maybe, you know, our audience is a little bit unique within marketing, but, you know, why is it important? Does it matter if it's B2B or B2C? I think a lot of our listeners are probably lean more heavily towards B2B brands as well. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm curious what your take is on that.
I don't think it matters, honestly. What your brand is, and your brand is important no matter who you're selling to, your brand is basically what people say about you when you're not in the room, right? Isn't that how they define it, right?
Yeah, so, of course.
Yeah. So first of all, say is in there. That's audio. Who knew, right? So that is your brand is something that people talk about when you're not there. So that whole consistent repetition thing, being consistent across all the sounds that you have for your brand is going to let people understand that you know who you are, that you are confident in who you are. And it's not just about the visual, it's also about the audio. So you know, I'm not sure exactly what your audience would be using as far as audio is concerned, how involved they are in the content creation and all of that kind of thing. But for instance, I know that there are some very well-known large brands that use the music from music directories on a regular basis. And the difficulties of doing that and the dangers of doing that can be that you end up sounding like everyone else, because everyone else has access to that same track on that same music directory, and five different other companies in completely different sectors than yours could use the same piece of music for very prominent advertising.
Sure.
So, you know, that just, honestly, it makes you look amateur.
Well, I thought it was interesting that you shared with me before this, right? A real example of basically the same audio used by, I think, I want to say it was three or four brands.
Yeah.
In very different contexts. And it was really something where now I pay attention to that, whereas I think in the past, I probably wouldn't have paid as much attention. That being said, it does. So I think the connection for our audience and what we do is, right, a lot of the folks in our team, kind of in the marketing ops world, marketing technology, will be involved with bringing the other parts of the brand to life, right? So producing websites, producing emails that have the right imagery, the right copy, the right fonts and things like that. And so and the reason I thought this was a connection here is that I think particularly with video, right? Video is becoming a bigger part of go-to-market activities. And so video naturally is going to probably have audio in most instances, whether it's voiceover or it's something that's underneath it. And I think that's why I thought our audience would care, is as they're being kind of thrown into learning a new channel or new technology that, you know, so, you know, I think that one of the things that we deal with is digital asset management, right? So you've got imagery. Are there platforms out there that do a really good job with, you know, helping store and categorize and, you know, audio, and how you would bring that into video production or whatever?
Hey, Hey everyone, it's Mike Rizzo here, and I'm interrupting your episode to bring you a brief message about, you might have guessed it, Mopsapalooza 2024, our second annual conference held in the vibrant city of Anaheim, California. We're hosting this hybrid event from the 5th of November through the 8th, and we would love for you to join us in person in Anaheim. But if you can't, please join us via live stream, courtesy of our sponsor, Excel Events. We're excited to offer an opportunity for professionals just like you to connect, learn, and grow among the best in the industry. Our event promises to be a highlight of the year, offering invaluable professional development experiences, live workshops, and of course, networking with your peers. Don't miss out on this incredible gathering right next to Disneyland in Southern California. Tickets are going fast. We will cap registration at 700 attendees. Secure your pass by visiting marketingops.com today, and we're looking forward to welcoming you to what is guaranteed to be an unforgettable event. It might just be the best event you've ever attended. But don't take my word for it. You can ask the community at any time. We'll see you there.
Well, there are, like I said, those music directories that, you know, will allow you to have license-free music, so you can get that on a regular basis. But again, like I said, anyone can use those pieces of music. So your competitor could use that same piece of music. And then how do you differentiate yourself, right? Mm-hmm. What I would say is, first of all, video, yes, it's very important. But if the video is bad, but the audio is audible and able to be listened to, you will generally get that audience still tuning in. If that audio is not good, they'll tune right out. There's no way they're going to sit there for bad audio.
Yeah.
So I just think that's so important, first of all.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And second of all, I think that a lot of these big companies and small companies, you know, depends on how many assets you want to get. That's where the expense comes from. But your touch points should have different sounds associated with them. And if you're getting those from a license-free directory, then anyone can have those same sounds. So that's why I usually direct people to audio branding specific companies, because those companies know how to get you a different sound for each touch point. So whether or not you are GE with a kettle that makes a sound when it's ready, you know, or you're on Google Home and you need to have a particular sound for someone when they're buying something on Google Home that happens to be yours, how do you differentiate yourself from your nearest competitor who sells exactly the same thing as you, but there's no visual there? You're not seeing anything. So, and then also you have the little added extras of, well, how does that audio sound on Google Home as opposed to in a kettle or on a television or in a podcast?
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things are things to pay attention to, and they can get very nitpicky, but they each have different uses and different use cases. Mm-hmm. So that's why I suggest a company that can help you navigate all of that, because it can be a little complicated. It doesn't have to be. It depends on the size of your company and what you do. And, you know, it could be as simple for you as having a jingle. It could be as simple for you as having a sonic logo, or having something that you say at the end of a video every time you do the video. It doesn't have to be complicated, but I am saying it's something to think about. It's definitely something to give some consideration to, not after all the visuals are done, but during that process.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for, as it relates back to a marketing ops function, right, and just sort of like almost this like role of being kind of the purveyor of like, is this thing doing what I expect it to do? And based on what I know about my organization and our standards, if I see something, say something, or in this case, if I hear something, say something, or maybe if I don't hear something, say something, you know, I think folks who are managing the operational delivery of a, maybe a telephony system, right, where someone has to get bounced around to different customer support engines, I think it's an important idea to be looking at that system and thinking about, hey, as this user is going through this part of the user experience, what's the hold music going to be like? Whose voice is going to be speaking to this person? Should it be somebody
not
internally
only that,
or,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Not only that, but, you know, what's the music that you're using?
Mm-hmm.
Is it, well, here's the thing. It depends on what your company is. What does your company do? What do you want? What emotion do you want to evoke in people when they experience your brand?
Yeah.
So that's really where the thought has to come in. And it's a melding of what you like and what you think your customers are going to like. It's not just what you like.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And I think yeah. to add a little layer of complexity to that is, you know, I worked with a close friend for a long time who a lot of their system was based on inbound calls, and a lot of their business, saving the business, was based on their reps fielding a call and making sure a customer got exactly what they needed. Even if they were ready to cancel, they were looking to save, right? And so in that layer of like, hey, this person clicked the button because they want to get out of whatever it is that they're signed up for, what emotion do you want to evoke as they're on hold, you know, waiting for this person because either they're super mad or they're just done. It was too hard, you know? And so like,
well, you certainly don't want to annoy them.
Right.
Anymore.
So, you know, you want to get them something like, that's peaceful. And so,
yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. But more than that, like think about who the company is. Mm-hmm. So I've mentioned this kind of an analogy before, but if you're a high-end jewelry store, don't have 80s hairband on your on hold.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. It's not a good look for you. Let's just say,
right.
So you have to sort of match the sound of your company to who you are and who you want to be to your customer. And all of this works together. Our senses all work together. So we need to stop thinking of this as one sensory experience. It's not just the visual. And, you know, let's be frank, we've all been inundated with the visual for so long now, and we're all on Zoom now, and it's all video. And I'm just going to say, from a woman's point of view, needing to look good on video is a pain in the ass, okay?
I feel like so much of our audience...
You're not
right
alone.
Now, yeah.
You're not alone.
So much of our audience is saying amen.
I'm sure, yes. It's just painful. But not all of everything that we experience is visual. And I think that sometimes we forget that in this very highly visual world. And companies shouldn't forget that, because that's... The sound is a really good way for people to make an emotional connection with you and your company. So, and again, another analogy, if you're watching a movie and you turn off the sound, you will get what's going on the screen. It's not like you'll miss everything that's happening, but you won't care. You don't get any of that emotional context,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So totally. So what I liken the audio portion of your brand to is the emotional context.
Mm.
And that allows the people experiencing your brand to be able to experience it deeply and to understand who you are. And they may not be loyal customers for the rest of their lives. That's never, you know, that may not happen.
Mm-hmm,
or they may be loyal to your brand and five others. You know, like you just don't know what their brand experience as far as loyalty is going to be. But if you can reach them on that emotional level, you are definitely going to be way more memorable than anyone else.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was that said, you know, people won't remember what you did, but they'll remember how you made them feel.
Yes, exactly.
So what's really interesting to me is I think one of the things you're pointing out is that I think you said free license audio, but I think there's also paid license stuff, but it's still
it's license free. Yeah, they're called license free music directories. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's interesting to me, and actually Mike and I went through this with this podcast, right? Mike went and found a bunch of sound to go into the intro, but I worked with so many marketers who were like, absolutely not. We are not going to use stock photography.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or stock video. That's which I'm sure is out there as well. But yet then we'll sort of overlay license free audio. So it's like,
yeah,
we're missing an opportunity, especially for that emotional connection. I think you're right. And so, I think that's an analogy that plays that is very comparable. And it's really interesting to me because, again, I've never would have thought of this had we not discovered your podcast. So, are you seeing that with some of your clients where they, you know, they've kind of gone through a process where they went and used stock photography, and we're using license-free audio, and you talk through that, talk them through a process of going and doing something custom or whatever for their brand?
Well, me personally, no, because I'm a voice actor and that's what I do. So so I don't instruct people on their audio brand. I certainly can direct people to various audio branding companies all over the world, actually, because I've talked to a bunch of them everywhere. and it's a fascinating field. It really is. Definitely, I could help them find someone to help them with that. I will say that a lot of the time when I'm called in to do something, first of all, it's an afterthought, which is kind of why I started my podcast in the first place, because it's very nice to be thought as the icing on the cake or the bow on the present. But I don't know how useful it is to the brands in the end. You know, I think really they should have been thinking of this right from the start so that it could be a strategic launch with everything that was going on. Not necessarily the voiceover, but the sound that they were after, as opposed to putting it out to an agent, thinking they needed this sound and then sort of changing their mind halfway through after they've gotten 100 auditions and saying, oh, okay, we're going to go in this direction now. Well, if they had started this whole process from way earlier, they would know exactly what they need. So I think it would have saved them a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of listening to demos that they really aren't caring about. So things like that, I think, would save people time and money. So, yes. But I mean, I will say that I am just as guilty of this as other people. And I'm learning as I go along, too, because when I started my podcast, I went to a license-free music directory. And I chose something that I thought would be indicative of what's on my podcast and who would be listening to my podcast. And I did the best I could at the time. And I thought it had a really catchy little guitar riff at the front that I thought would be an earworm for people and they'd remember it a little bit. And then as I went, I was like, well, okay, what am I preaching here? So I was thinking, okay, well, now I'm coming up on the 100th episode. So at the 100th episode, I switched my music up and basically I paid a composer to make me something that was similar to what I had before. So it still had a riff in the beginning that people would be able to, you know, have that experience with, but that it was actually genuinely my own. So now I could use that on my podcast and no one else can use that. It's my specific music. And, I have heard not a whole lot, but every once in a while I'll hear music on podcasts that I've heard on other podcasts.
Interesting.
And like intro, outro music that I've heard on other podcasts, because I don't know what it is about some podcasts, but they really like having that really heavy rock guitar in the beginning. I hear that a lot.
Yep.
And I there are three podcasts I know that use exactly the same music.
That's
and
so
it's
funny.
That particular thing that, yeah. So I was guilty of it and I have now fixed that.
We spent a bit of time. I think we picked we had to pay for the license to the music. So it's not, license free.
Oh, yeah.
But it is.
You do pay for them.
Yeah.
But it's the ability to be able to use them over time and not have to re-up all the time.
Yeah.
That's kind of what they mean by license free.
Got you. I see what you're,
yeah.
So you're not saying totally free. But yes,
no,
gotcha.
You do pay.
Yeah.
But one time.
Yeah. So we licensed. We went through a heck of a process, though. We were like, there were some sort of techie sounds, because we speak to a very technical audience. So we were experimenting with these sort of techie sounds. And then there was some heavier guitar kind of stuff and then some folky kind of stuff, which is, of course, kind of in it. My taste preferences more than anything else. And so I think we fell somewhere sort of in the middle. It's not, mm-hmm. It definitely isn't on the techie sounds kind of thing, but it's a nice energetic rhythm to try to hopefully, we've never even heard about it from anybody. We just turned it on one day and
Right.
Yeah. I don't think anybody has added anything. So that's either a very good thing or a very bad thing. Everybody hates it or they're just whatever. So.
Well,
it's a process,
if it works for
though.
You, yeah. It is definitely a process. The reason why I suggest that companies who have a lot of possible touch points do this kind of thing is because it'll save you money in the end.
Mm.
When we were, years ago when video was still a big thing, it's always going to be a big thing, I'm sure. But when it became very internet content driven, then people who, or companies, brands that had been making one or two videos a month or something like that, now they're making 50. You know, like there's a huge amount of content going out there right now. So imagine having to license a piece of music every time you're making a new video. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
If you think about it, I mean, because you have to ask for permission to use that piece of music every time you make a new piece of content. That is huge. So ultimately, I think if someone really goes through and makes an audio brand for their company, I think they're going to save money at this point.
Yeah.
Because they'll be able to use that for all sorts of different videos. They can switch the tone of it. They can use major keys or minor keys. They can use different instruments. It's like the theme song of a television show, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, because I don't know how much they do that anymore, but they used to have these themes on television shows where that theme would then play throughout the entire episode, depending on what feel of emotion you were going to have in that scene. So,
happy-go-lucky. It happens even with my, so I have a 3.5-year-old boy.
Video games are really good with this.
Yeah, video games for sure. 3.5-year-old boy who's obsessed with the show Bluey. And for those of you with children, you definitely watch that show, I hope. And I actually love the show. It's great. But their music is played in completely different keys depending on if it's happy or sad or a learning moment, but it's the same tone, and the transitions between like scenes often uses the exact same, you know, thematic music. And you'll see that a lot with the kids shows for sure, because it like hooks them. It's that earworm that you're talking about. This,
see, I don't totally know why people think this works with kids, or they know it works with kids and then they don't use it on adults.
Yeah,
because it so totally still works on adults.
Yeah, without a doubt. It completely works on adults too.
Well, and I think you alluded to it at least earlier on in our conversation. I know this, I want to get into like the brain kind of connection to sound and other stuff, because one of the podcasts you suggested I listen to, and I forget the gentleman's name, who's from,
it's Steve Keller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At Pandora, right?
Yeah. He's actually the sonic strategy director now for all of SiriusXM and all of their properties.
Oh,
and he works with an advertising agency called Studio Resonate that is part of Pandora and SiriusXM and all of that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So
they
some
interesting things.
I mean, you told me it's going to blow my mind, or blew your mind.
I did.
So the one I remember. And maybe we can kind of talk about the connection to the brain and how that works. But the one I remember, and I cannot remember what drink maker it was, but they actually did a test where they had people drinking a sports drink, if I remember right.
Yeah, it was called Propel.
Tend to be salty or sweet, right? Or a little more. And they had people listening to different kinds of music and sort of self-reporting the taste, right? And so what did they end up finding out?
Well, when they were doing this promo, and this was before the before times, before COVID, I think it was
lock.
Like 20. Yeah.
A different version of BC, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. BT.
Yeah.
Before times.
Yep. That's right.
I think this was like 2018 or something like that. I could be wrong about that date, but it was definitely before any of this. They were doing a promotion for Propel, and it was a big demo. People were there. They had people walking around looking at things that had to do with Propel, and then they had these DJ stations. And these DJ stations, people could go up to them. They'd put a pair of headphones on. They'd have an iPad in front of them that would allow them to turn the sounds that they were hearing in their headphones and the taste into from salty or sweet, because these are electrolyte drinks, right? So they're either they're Gatorade-like drinks. And when they did this, it was actually changing the way that the drink tasted based on what they were hearing in their ears. And I don't necessarily know that it was specific songs or a piece of music. It might have been sounds. He didn't really specify what that was, so I'm not sure exactly what it was that did it, but it was definitely a sound you were hearing in your ear that was affecting what you were tasting. And they're doing a lot of experiments like this, because people who are diabetic in hospitals. They really like sweet, but they can't have it. So if you can pipe in some kind of music or sound that they're going to hear while they're in their hospital bed or whatever, and you're feeding them something that isn't sweet, but it tastes a little better to them, then that's helpful. Or if you want to use sustainable food, like I think jellyfish is one of those things that's sustainable food, and they have them all over. You can have a ton of them, but the way that you prepare them sort of like it depends on the taste, depends on how you prepare them. And if you make them like crunchier, like if you put a batter on them or something, or you make them feel like the mouth feel a little or taste a bit crunchier, then you can make people experience it as a better experience. And the sound can help people experience that mouthfeel taste.
The psychology of that is fascinating to me, because like, you know, you're thinking like all of what you just said, just like sort of my for those that can't see, we're on video experiencing this conversation together, and my eyes got real wide, and I was like, really? This is super weird. So
it's pretty insane,
but like,
actually. Yeah.
You know, take for just a moment this concept of like, if jellyfish is the example, literally the term jellyfish, right? Mm-hmm. And is like squishy, gooey, like jelly, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you
use like calamari, right
potentially kind of, but like
that
but
reminds
just the term
me, yeah.
Like when you like I tend to picture things, and so as soon as you said that I'm picturing this like very fluid object that's mm-hmm. very flowing, and then what you turn around and say is that like people actually enjoy it a little bit more because they're maybe not as freaked out by the concept of the fact that they're consuming this squishy, gooey, flowy thing when it's crunchy. Because it's actually the opposite of what they are picturing, right?
Yes.
So they're like, hey, if it's crunchier, this is a little bit more enjoyable because it's sort of the opposite of what I expected, which is the super flowy, like gooey thing. That's just my take on this, like psychology of why maybe that would work. But my goodness, like what an interesting, I know
our brains are, so that for me, as interesting as that was, it wasn't as much of a surprise because I happened to have been exposed to some recent brain research, and there's this concept of plasticity in brain.
Yes.
So 100 years ago, people thought if you had a damage in your brain, it couldn't be fixed. Well, your brain can actually reroute signals. And mm-hmm. one of the examples I remember from a book about it was they literally had people who were kind of blinded. They'd been able to see if something happened, they became blind. And one of the things they tried was actually putting an electronic device that had electrodes on their tongue, and then like a camera that was mounted on their head, and they could literally sort of like in air quotes, right? See,
mm-hmm.
but somehow the camera doing stimulation on their tongue
to send the signals to the brain,
send signals to their brain that they could see. And it wasn't like really seeing, but it was like, it's amazing what you can do.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So the connection, I think that point is right. This connect, I think we're still learning the connection between all our different senses and how our brains.
Yeah, I don't want to take us all the way down the crazy rabbit hole of the episode that I watched on Amazon Prime with like people that can literally see that are completely blindfolded. Like I watched this happen, and maybe it was all fake, but maybe it was a super deep fake. But I think it's possible. Like I think some people can actually like see the world without actually using their eyes, and it's freaking me out a little bit. But I'm very into it. And I think, hey, you know, bringing it back to the core of like marketing operations, I think two things are kind of pulling through in this conversation for me. One, it's a fascinating learning experience to just talk to you, Jody, and think about these things. And I think that persona like resonates throughout this kind of type of role. We're often very curious. So we're trying to learn new things and trying to think about things.
So am I.
Yeah.
That's why I started the podcast. Yeah. I'm not I'm learning as we go too. So
for sure. So I think this audience, I hope will enjoy just the idea of like this type of learning. And then I think the second thing is that at a bare minimum, for all of our listeners who are tuning into this episode and you're like, you're tangentially associated to brand, right? You deliver brand in digital channels all the time. You can turn around and bridge a conversation, maybe for the first time, maybe not. Maybe you get to talk to your brand team on a regular basis. But if you don't, maybe this is a good episode to share with them and say, hey, like, In marketing ops, we actually talk about some interesting things that have to do with brand, inclusive of delivery of the sound of a brand. And you could share this with them and maybe strike up a new conversation and make a new friend or find new ways to collaborate with that department. So at a bare minimum, if you're hearing this, just think about like who else on your team would enjoy this conversation, because I know I'm learning something and maybe the brand team would enjoy it too. So,
yeah, I mean, that was exactly the same thought I had as how this could, you know, very often, and Jody, you may not know this, but our folks in our role often feel like they're not thought of or perceived as a strategic part of the go-to-market activity in a company.
We have a lot in common that way.
You said it, I think, earlier, right, Jody? You said it's a little bit of an afterthought.
And I don't think it should be.
Agreed. So I think the idea for me of why I was really, A, I was fascinated, but B, I thought there was an opportunity for our audience to learn something that they could then go and take to the rest of their teams in marketing and branding in particular, and just say, hey, is this something you've been thinking about? Because if you haven't, you should listen to this and check it out.
Yeah. Or if they don't like us, you know, they could just go listen to Jody.
No, I would totally send them there.
Well, everybody who's listening, we're linking to her podcast in this episode's show notes. Don't worry. You can go listen to the expert.
You know.
Yeah, you've got her. You've got her. Don't hire Mike or Michael.
No. Well, at least Mike, as we found out, you've done some learning on that. So
I don't think I have
the voice for it.
I took a voiceover class, but that's something else.
Well, so one other aspect I'd like to kind of talk about, because you and I talked about it a little bit, Jody, is how, particularly for those in the audience who are trying to sell globally, and how audio sort of goes beyond language and translation and that kind of stuff. So, how do you think about that? Is that another part of the value of focusing on audio branding as a way to communicate outside of maybe your core geography?
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I think MasterCard is actually a really good example of how that works, because what they did was they launched, I think it's like 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago now, something like that, maybe even longer. But they've launched a whole new audio brand that not only will play when a transaction goes through, but they have it on all of their commercials and they have it on everything that they do all over the world. And they are a global brand. So they have a lot of touch points, first of all, and they deal with a lot of people everywhere. So what they've done with certain pieces of sound or music is that they use different instruments or different rhythms based on where they are around the world. And they have a specific tone, a series of notes that you will start to recognize as MasterCard the more you hear it. And what's really interesting about that is that when you use sound as a basis for reaching out to your potential client or customer, it doesn't have to be based in language, which is really interesting, because then it means that you can put a soundscape together for your company that can be global, that can actually reach out to a bunch of people without you having to do a whole lot of translating necessarily. I mean, if you're a global brand, you probably know you already have to do that. English is a great language, okay, but it's not what everyone around the world speaks. And so if you want to reach a global audience, you need to be translating into various different languages depending on where you're marketing to. But it does give a bit of a short form if you're using those sounds, so that people in those environments that may not already have that translated text can recognize who you are before that happens.
That's super interesting. All of it. I'm watching a series on Apple TV called Invasion right now, and it has to do with aliens. But long story short, these creatures don't have a language. They just communicate through sound. And so it's interesting that like the universe is like, I'm watching the series and it's all kind of unfolding. And here we are talking about like how you can break down barriers of different language, you know, understanding, right? I don't necessarily understand. I don't really understand hardly any other language. I took Spanish for a lot of years. So that's probably my own fault. I should have paid more attention in school.
I feel the same way you do. But for French, gosh, actually.
Ditto.
Yeah. But gosh, like if I do hear that very familiar tone from Netflix or otherwise, like I immediately know, you know, I know what it is. So
yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting stuff.
I think it's just getting down to our basics. And I think what happens is that as humans, we tend to complicate things overly much. Mm-hmm. And I think really when it comes right down to it, advertising, marketing, branding is all about remembering. It's all about triggering that memory, being memorable. And if you're not being memorable, that's failed advertising, branding, marketing, really. So break it down to its basics. You know, insects use sound to communicate with one another. Why do we have to make it so complicated?
Right. I think this has been super fascinating. I think, again, for our audience, A, I hope you found it interesting. B, I hope you've learned something about how there can be value. I think I probably most everyone else who's listening has played a part in helping with, imagery that goes with a brand and how do you make sure you have the right stuff and all that. And I think we can go to the table to say there's value in also not going with stock audio, right, as part of our audio brand. So it's been super interesting. I'm sure we could go on for a while. It sounds like Mike, you and I both are sort of music nerds as well on top of that. So maybe, yeah. Jody, we also need to listen to your album.
By all means.
So I will say I'm not a big jazz fan, but I also can appreciate
That's
it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do mostly torch songs. So, you know, of the Ella Fitzgerald, Billie Holiday, kind of that sort of variety.
Now,
so
now I'm more interested.
Yeah.
So, and I'm just going to put this out into the world. Anyone who wants to email me, mike@themopros.com, tell me your feelings on our intro music and tell me your feelings on, we actually do, I specifically do two other different types of audio visual intros based on the workshops that we do or the no bullshit demos that we do, so that you know what you're about to see is one of those two categories. And tell me, did you pick up on that? Do you like it? Do you hate it? I'd be interested. And then Jody, I don't actually want you to tell me if you like our intro music live, but after the show, you could tell us.
I wouldn't tell you live.
I think I clicked play and I got through the first 2 seconds and I went, that's a pretty hard guitar. She's not going to like this.
I have a pretty hard guitar on my own intro. So, you do. I do.
And yeah. I like that. So, anyway, so Jody, super fun. Really enjoyed it. If folks want to follow you, we will put stuff in the show notes to kind of point them to your podcast and your website.
I appreciate it.
How can people find you and connect with you if they're interested?
Well, if they are after voiceovers that might fit the tone and emotion of their brand, I'm very happy to talk with them. That's at voiceoversandvocals.com. And if people are interested in the podcast, that's at audiobrandingpodcast.com. Pretty simple.
Awesome. Those are solid keyword URLs. That's great. It's from an SEO.
I used to do SEO and internet marketing. That was what I did before. Yeah.
Although,
before
topic for another day, I found out that the keywords in your URL aren't as relevant anymore as they used to be. So it's interesting.
I'll take it for what it is right now.
Oh, yeah. Take it all.
I'm good.
Yeah. Sure. Jody, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you.
Really, this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. You guys are a great combo.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, we're good.
We're just missing our other partner in crime, Naomi, today. So next time.
Yeah, we are definitely missing her. Well, and thanks again, Jody. Thanks, Mike. Thank you to our audience. Thanks for listening. As always, send us your feedback. And if you so choose, give Mike your feedback about the intro music on our podcast that we just added a few weeks ago. And with that, we'll talk to you all next time. Bye, everyone.
Okay. Bye. Bye.